I know now, exclaimed Tom. Somebody's drowned it.
That's it, said Huck. They done that last summer when Bill Turner got drowned. They shoot a cannon over the water, and that makes him come up to the top. Yes, then they take loaves of bread and put quicksilver in them and set them afloat. And wherever there's anybody that's drowned, they'll float right there and stop.
Yes, I've heard about that, said Joe. I wonder what makes the bread do that.
Oh, it ain't the bread so much, said Tom. I reckon it's mostly what they say over it before they start it out.
But they don't say anything over it, said Huck. I've seen them, and they don't.
Well, that's funny, said Tom. But maybe they say it to themselves. Well, of course they do. Anybody might know that. The others agreed that there was reason in what Tom said. Because an ignorant lump of bread, uninstructed by an incantation, could not be expected to act very intelligently when sent upon an errand of such gravity.
By jings, I wish I was over there now, said Joe.
I do too, said Huck. I'd give heaps to know who it is.
The boys still listened and watched. Presently, a revealing thought flashed through Tom's mind, and he exclaimed, "Boys, I know who's drowned. It's us!" They felt like heroes in an instant. Here was a gorgeous triumph. They were missed. They were mourned. Hearts were breaking on their account. Tears were being shed. Accusing memories of unkindnesses to these poor, lost lads were rising up. And unavailing regrets and remorse were being indulged. And best of all, the departed were the talk of the whole town, and the envy of all the boys, as far as this dazzling notoriety was concerned. This was fine. It was worthwhile to be a pirate after all. As twilight drew on, the ferry boat went back to her accustomed business, and the skiffs disappeared. The pirates returned to camp. They were jubilant with vanity over their new grandeur and the illustrious trouble they were making. They caught fish, cooked supper and ate it, and then fell to guessing at what the village was thinking and saying about them, and the pictures they drew of the public distress on their account were gratifying to look upon from their point of view. But when the shadows of night closed them in, they gradually ceased to talk and sat gazing into the fire, with their minds evidently wandering elsewhere. The excitement was gone now, and Tom and Joe could not keep back thoughts of certain persons at home who were not enjoying this fine frolic as much as they were. Misgivings came. They grew troubled and unhappy. A sigh or two escaped unawares. By and by, Joe timidly ventured upon a roundabout feeler as to how the others might look upon a return to civilization. Not right now, but Tom withered him with derision. Huck, being uncommitted as yet, joined in with Tom, and the waverer quickly explained and was glad to get out of the scrape with as little taint of chicken-hearted homesickness clinging to his garments as he could. Mutiny was effectually laid to rest for the moment. As the night deepened, Huck began to nod and presently to snore. Joe followed next. Tom lay upon his elbow motionless for some time, watching the two intently. At last he got up cautiously on his knees and went searching among the grass and the flickering reflections flung by the campfire. He picked up and inspected several large semi-cylinders of thin white bark of a sycamore, and finally chose two which seemed to suit him. Then he knelt by the fire and painfully wrote something upon each of these with his red keel. One he rolled up and put in his jacket pocket, and the other he put in Joe's hat and removed it to a little distance from the owner. And he also put in the hat certain schoolboy treasures of almost inestimable value, among them a lump of chalk, an India rubber ball, three fish hooks, and one of that kind of marbles known as a sure-enough crystal. Then he tiptoed his way cautiously among the trees till he felt that he was out of hearing, and straightway broke into a keen run in the direction of the sandbar.